that the polar vortex collapses because it suddenly warms up, and the stratospheric air goes downward and spills at the surface out of the Antarctic. But this whole event, it has ripple-on effects affecting even the atmosphere near the Arctic. And what happens is this event is able to amplify single extreme events or to suppress them or to weaken them. But what we are concerned about is another kick of these events that are additional amplified by it, like a heat wave. You get, like, let's say 45.6 degrees. Suddenly you have a stratospheric warming in the Antarctic, and you get 48.2 degrees, another 0.3 degrees on top. But you have other processes like soil moisture or hot upper air from a flooding area also coming down in this area, all contributing to this heat wave reaching abnormal levels. And suddenly you have, like, Iraq heat wave again reaching 50.1 degrees or something we have now there, or Iran. And on all these small additional contributions from other system changes, they lead to the single extreme events getting even a little bit more extreme, a little bit more extreme, and we get now this insane levels of events, and this is this non-linearity inside. The more systems that increase their variability, the more systems you have that contribute teleconnections that strengthen systems or suppress systems. And sometimes you have extreme events where a lot of contributions happens that all add up to create a perfect storm. And suddenly you get a heat wave that is just insane from its intensity, which was not before possible, because you did not have all these teleconnections contributing to a single event. And that's the problem. The whole system starts now to fluctuate more. And the more fluctuations you have of more systems, the higher the chance that single events create the perfect storms with lots of influences, making the single event more extreme and more extreme. And that's the reason, the main reason we have now this increase in the most intense events, the most intense class of events. There we have the largest increases. And this is with this heat wave, this paper. The reason these heat waves are so much increasing is all these different components from the local to the planetary contributing to single events and pushing them over the edge. And the most important change we have now is ocean surface warming. It really speeded up in 23. And warmer ocean surfaces on a water planet, it's the main ingredient that you need for both flooding and heat waves. And that's highly worrying that the ocean surface temperature speeded now up. And that's also feedback reaction of Earth. And that's behind these intensifying heat waves. It's really crazy what happens in the Earth system now.
We will be right back with the conclusion of my conversation with German climate digger Cem Umsonst.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
What are we to make of the crazy weather this year? We will continue talking with Earth System nerd Jan Umsonst. Yeah, I think one of the fundamental things that may be slowing down our ability to communicate this to the public and even some scientists to understand it is that the natural systems are a little bit more complex than we would ever think. But also that nature was not designed for the human mind to understand, or you could redesign that and say the human mind was not designed to understand all of nature. We cannot see changes in the atmosphere or in the depths of the ocean. We have to measure with various devices and put it together. We don't even really see the things we see coming in from the stars. All of those are colorized by NASA because they may actually be an image of radio waves or something beyond our senses. So I think that somehow, though, you and I and others have to get out the idea of teleconnections, of wave trains, of planetary waves These are not something that most people understand, much less discuss in common speech, but it's something that's now going to lean on our lives in many ways. I mean, what are wave trains?
Actually, wave train is a jet stream that make it has a certain flow direction. They'll make waves. Yeah, and waves are, for example, affected by temperature and pressure differences in the direction of the jet stream. So if you get changing temperature and pressure differences along the way of the jet, it starts to make curves. It's called thermal wind balance. It's like one of the principles of how the jet stream direction is calculated. But pressure differences in the way of the jet starts to influence its course. And it always goes, it follows, if you have a more north-south pressure difference, it goes more straight. If you have a pressure difference that is more, or temperature difference that is more east-west, it goes more waviness, it gets more wavy. And what we observe now is that the pressure differences in the solar direction, east-west, warm, cold, and at the same latitude, they start to increase. So the waviness also starts to increase. And the waveguide is that if you have disturbances in the jet, it's passed downward, the waviness of jet. And the problem is if you get more disturbances in one place that grows in size and intensity, the waves are passed onward in a flow direction. So you get more waves downstream if you have one disturbances. But if the disturbances along the jets are increasing, you get also more chaotic jets also. And so what we observe now, the jets are more and more disturbed by heat waves and flooding areas and low pressure systems that move north-southward or north-northward or high pressure systems that persist in one place. So we get now all these chaotic effects, also like air that goes from north, cold air spills southward, or warm air reaches up to the Arctic because of blocking patterns. This is a stuck high pressure system where wave makes a curve around it. So we get now all these air mass displacements, which also cause the jet to make more curves or to break up or to be deflected in the stratosphere, that creates now all this chaotic behavior that you get now, for example, in one area get a very persistent extreme, in the other area you get a fast exchange between wet and warmer and suddenly hot and dry. So these shifts also intensify. So it's difficult to pin it down what is happening, but you get all terms of fluctuations and persistence systems. So it all has to do with the behavior also of the jet, but also with soil moisture, stuff like this. So wave train is for me something like the jet passes on disturbances, because the wave functions like a rope. If you swing the rope at one end, it makes this waves going downward. And this is like jet. But as the jet is now disturbed in ever more places, it gets also more erratic. And the other thing is with the jet is also if you have decreasing north-south temperature differences, the wave, the jet can be disturbed more easily. So the jet is not only be disturbed more, it's also can be disturbed in its flow more easily, because the pressure differences in some sectors and in some time, in a week or something, are reduced. So so the whole thing gets now really chaotic. There was one study that was about quasi-resonant amplification of the jet. This is this waveguide also that is that the wave make that the jet makes 6 or 8 waves around the whole northern latitudes, and this kind of 6 to 8 wave configurations of the jet they tripled the last decades. And this means you get in one area get this flooding where you have a trough, like a cold area in the atmosphere, you get this flooding. And where you have a ridge, where you have a hot area with a higher atmosphere, you get these extreme heat waves. So you have now more of these jet configurations, which create a circumpolar chain of extremes. Hot, cold, flooding, warm, dry, then again hot, flood, warm, dry. So we get now circumhemisphere synchronization of extreme events. It's also another thing what happens there. All is related also to the jet, but also how the jet is, the coupling between the surface and the jet is also intensifying. This means not only pressure differences in the atmosphere play a role in modulating the jet stream, but also surface extreme. If you get a massive marine heat wave, it creates a higher atmosphere, but also it supports a low convective environment, which supports a high pressure system. And this high pressure system hold in place leads to the jet going northward of the high pressure system. So these marine heat waves also act now more and more like wave guides, which lead to persistent pattern in the jet in one area, which leads downstream to extremes in certain areas. So these knock-on effects also increase, and the whole thing gets now really chaotic.
Well, what are you hoping to do? And do you get out in places other than Facebook? How do you pass on your science knowledge?
Actually, I'm not very good at writing Finnish texts. The largest text I wrote was 2,000 pages about the oceans with thousands of studies, but I did not finish it. But then I know microbiology of the oceans, and then I know. Actually, I have my channels, and I will write. I've tried to write more longer texts, some in-depth investigations of the change or how to connect things. But actually, I'm very averse. I'm distributing my knowledge, but also it's writing is the best method, actually. Then you can organize your thoughts and can structurize the thing. But I don't know, actually. I hope that our species will understand that we are heading for bad times. That's my hope.
Well, if we had that realization, perhaps we would avoid the very worst times and extinction. That's my hope. And I think that we will. I'm not a total doomer. I see how people have survived leaping off burning ships and things like that. We're a very tough species. Some of us will go on, but our current way of doing things cannot go on. It will self-destroy.
I'm not a doomer. I'm a realist, actually. And realistic speaking, we are heading for an extinction level event. But we can reverse it. If humanity frees its potential because emission reduction, the times are over, we need our full potential to reverse what is happening in the Earth system, because we trigger likely a self-reinforcing global warming, which will go out of our hands, even if we go down to zero emissions. And to reverse that, we will need to draw out greenhouse gases as fast, as much as we can do it. And so I hope that this intensification of extreme events, which will go now much faster, that cannot be anymore ignored, that it will lead to realization of our species, that we have to act as a species, and that otherwise we will fail as a species. This is it's not anymore able to mitigate or to adapt to. Mitigate, yes, but we cannot adapt to what's coming at us. Like China, they will have to change the whole water control system. They have to rebuild every dam and all these reservoirs, because the rain amounts will just go insane levels. And so it just shows us that we will not be able to adapt. So maybe we will realize that we will have to reverse what our water planet is now starting to kick off, hopefully. And so I came to the realization, doesn't matter what I write, doesn't matter what I do, the people have to realize it through their own experiences. And hopefully our species will understand it. So this is, for me, also the reason it doesn't matter what I would write, what I would try to communicate. You reach some people, but it's a question of our species, and it's too waste. So hopefully people will understand.
All right. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there, but I would like to talk to you again. This is great.
I mean, I'm not inside this definition thing. I'm not interested in definitions. I'm interested in actually what moves the jet And now we find out it's not only the atmosphere and pressure differences and temperature differences, but it's also surface extremes that modulate the jet stream flow direction. So it's interacting. And this was before not the case. Before you could calculate the jet's direction just by thermal wind balance and pressure differences. But now they realize it's not really fitting anymore. It seems like the surface extremes play a role also now. It's really interesting to watch science to find new aspects of things they are studying since decades. But the atmosphere physicians, they could not see it before because the coupling is just starting to lift off. And now they can see it happening, how this intensification processes work. And before, they were not apparent. They were not visible. And just now they can observe it, and now they can make a theory around it. So actually, our whole theory of atmosphere physics is around a system with a lower energy level. Now we get atmosphere with a higher energy level, so we need different physics. And it's also highly interesting what's happening there.
Radio EcoShock.
That was Earth System nerd Jan Umsonst in an unscripted interview by Zoom July 31st, 2025. Find more notes and quotes and links in my show blog at ecoshock.org. I hope to have Jan back in the fall as we try to find out why and how climate threats accelerate as we modify the atmosphere. Stay tuned. Jan began by saying it is a very bad idea to heat up a water planet. A new study released July 24th reports marine heat waves covered 96% of the oceans in 2023, lasted four times longer than average. Right now, there is a vast marine heat wave in the North Pacific Ocean. No doubt that is twisting weather out of shape downstream in the atmosphere, which, due to the direction Earth turns, is North America. Weather systems and atmospheric pressure patterns often originate over the North Pacific and then propagate eastward, impacting weather over North America. This is not an El Niño. Although it is still early for such a projection, it appears we are headed into another weak La Niña season. So it's not that. It is just straight up too much energy, trapped by our greenhouse gas emissions, landing in the huge Pacific Ocean and feeding back into our unstable weather.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
David Spratt is a climate policy analyst in Australia and research director at the Breakthrough National Center for Climate Restoration. He is known for his book and website called Climate Code Red. David has been on Radio EcoShock a couple of times. In a recent interview with Nick Breeze of Climate Gen, Spratt says the widespread idea that 1.5 degrees of warming is some kind of safe resting point is proven absurd by recent events. Earth has already reached 1.5C degree of warming about 16 years ahead of predictions. Are we safe? I am not. Nobody is. Spratt points to James Hansen's position that 1.5 degrees C of warming is a point of instability. Nothing rests there. Either it keeps on getting hotter, or humans somehow help it get cooler, or a miracle happens. David says either cool back to 1 degree or right back to pre-industrial carbon levels, with geoengineering of some sort if we must, or we go to 3 degrees, where very little survives.
Is not a point of system stability. And the reason for that is obvious, and it's before our eyes right now, and that is that so many carbon cycles are now out of sync. And whether it's forest, whether it's permafrost, whether it's boreal forest, whether it's retreating ice sheets changing the reflectivity of the planet, 1.52 is not a point of system stability. Either going to end up at 3, or you're going to have to cool back to 0.
David is a longtime climate activist, and he's now loudly calling for immediate experiments in cooling with sulfates, that is, geoengineering. Host Nick Breeze in the UK raises a concern that geoengineering might cause an unforeseen backlash in climate affairs, including icing over his own country. This is a conversation you should hear.
Potentially going to keep going to a degree, a whole degree of overshoot. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dialogue. I know that there's a tipping points conference going on, and we just had the Arctic Repair Conference that I attended, and the people talking about the AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, the ocean currents that transport heat around and keep the world as we know it climatically. That's potentially slowing down and stopping, which would transform global climate. And yet, when they analyze the impacts of climate intervention, so if you did stratospheric aerosol injection, for example, so you pump stuff up to try and cool down, you really got to start 5 years ago because of the whole processes involved. I couldn't repeat the science to you, but as you go further down this road and closer to it tipping, if it actually tips, the recent research seems to indicate if you tried to cool then, you could actually cause a massive advance of ice sheets down to southern England.
Yeah.
Now, there's loads of stuff around that.
I think there are two issues there. First of all, coming back to this question of overshoots and getting in too late, there's this thing which I won't try and explain in detail called hysteresis, which basically says the path from A to B is not the same path from B back to A. That is, for example, if you melt an ice sheet or slow down an AMOC, that can happen really quickly in 100, 200 years, very quickly in historical terms. But the path back is really slow. I remember talking to our Antarctic scientists saying, we think that the tipping point for the really vulnerable Antarctic glaciers was around 0.5 to 0.8 of a degree, looking back. But they said you might have to get back to zero to refreeze it. So this idea of overshoot and being able to just, open the blind and everything will be all right again, this is a problem. Overshoot, because of hysteresis and other things, makes it a very complicated question. And the second issue you referred to is something that I think Mike McCracken, I don't know whether he talked about in your recent interview with him, he said there's this view that climate interventions, sulfate, cooling the planet is something that we'll do when everything else has failed. When we've got to 2.5 or 3 degrees, but he said at 2.5 or 3 degrees, it probably won't work because the problem is too big. He said, you need to start testing this early. He says at 1.5 degrees, it might work. At 2.5 or 3, it won't. And that's the issue. And I think that's parallel to the AMOC story that you were telling, that waiting things get bad and thinking some magic bullet will reverse it is not going to happen.
Is it time for desperate measures? Personally, I don't think we know enough to mess with nature, and I wouldn't want to see geoengineering go ahead while we continue to invest and expand fossil fuel. We can't keep fossil fuels and engineer the climate at tremendous risk. We don't even know what would happen. But David thinks we have no time left to wait. You can find the Spratt interview with Nick Breeze on YouTube or at gen.cc, that's GENN.cc. Of course, there's also a link in my blog. The YouTube interview is titled, At the Point of Systemic Collapse, What is the Least Worst Outcome? It is late, and I have to assess our situation and get ready. Tomorrow may be smoke, fire, or flood here in the climate casino. Many experts have been warning this would come. For decades, as Canada burns right now, as Spain and Greece burned, and Australia and certainly Russia, Radio EcoShock broadcast The New Age of Superfire back in July 2016.
Nobody ever lived like this. Heat in winter, flood all of a sudden. Winds are wild. Told us.
For those of you fearing floods from the northeast of North America all the way to Beijing, we have at least a half dozen programs on the whys and wherefores of expanding flood threats as the planet warms. 2 weeks ago, I just covered the deadly floods in Kerrville, Texas, in New Mexico, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Chicago. I played an interview with UCLA expert Jesse Norris about extreme rainfall events that was recorded in September 2021. Get the full show with links in my blog, all free, of course, no sign-ups, just science direct from the authors. I mean, nothing pops up on you. I don't want your email address. I don't want you to sign up for anything. Just grab the science and spread it out as far as you can. How about my new show, Global Super Rain, The New Face of Climate Change? We talked with expert Jonathan Gourley from the NOAA National Severe Storms Laboratory. Will that even continue to exist? That was in 2023, but it could have been today. Here's a quick sample from that interview with some tips on how to stay alive during a flash flood event.
Radio EcoShock.
From Norman, Oklahoma, Jonathan Gourley, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
I can't keep track of all the bizarre extreme rainfalls and flash floods this month alone. What do you think is going on?
Well, I think what you're seeing is the result of extreme heating that we've been experiencing, because if you look at the global temperatures, we've been setting monthly records. So if we look at the theory of that, then what happens with warmer oceans, then you add more fuel to these tropical storms and hurricanes. And then the part that I work on is more the inland flash flooding, and that's less impacted by the warmer oceans, but everything's connected in the Earth system, of course. And so what I study is more of the, let's say, the land surface impacts that we get from warming and what that results in terms of rainfall. So with increased temperatures, then what we have is much greater potential for heavy rainfall, since the atmosphere can hold much more water vapor in its warmer temperatures than it has the capability to transport that increased water vapor over land surfaces. And then what we get with that is the potential for much heavier rainfall. And that's what we've been seeing in the last couple months, if we continue in this way.
That was Jonathan Gourley from the NOAA National Severe Storms Lab on Radio EcoShock, September 20th, 2023. Get the full interview with the link in my show blog. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening. This is Radio EcoShock.
The old moon sees dark trees below. The new sun sees barren ground. We gather now in hospice times to say.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When people buy used goods and vintage clothes from Goodwill, that money helps fund job training programs, including a new effort to prepare people for careers in clean energy. Goodwill's Clean Tech Accelerator launched in 5 states last year and is now expanding to more. It offers paid training in solar installation, electric vehicle charger maintenance, and more.
Most people that come to us are coming to us because they're looking for a new opportunity. They have either been stuck in one particular industry or job and they're wanting to gain a new skill, and then they're wanting to provide a better life for themselves and their family.
Monique McDaniels is with Goodwill in South Carolina. Her chapter is training people to install and service HVAC systems and electric heat pumps, which can heat and cool a home without oil or gas. Participants get hands-on experience with the technology.
We'll have an actual lab where they'll be working on the actual machines. They'll be able to touch it, feel it, break it apart.
She says market research shows there are already well-paid jobs in her area for people with these skills.
You can come in with very little knowledge or experience. You can gain these skills and really create the quality of life that you're looking for yourselves and for your family.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.